From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll look at the looming fiscal crisis facing Milwaukee County and how it could impact public services like parks and libraries. Then we'll have a discussion with a group of working parents about the challenges they face and how things have changed since the pandemic.
It is a little bit of a hindrance into the normalcy of going back to work from once you're a parent, because you still do have that other aspect of carrying family life into the work life.
Plus, Bubbler Talk will explore what live albums have been recorded in Milwaukee venues. All that's coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here's today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us today. Last week, Milwaukee County released its five-year fiscal forecast, and its predictions are troubling. The expected budget shortfall is even higher than previously predicted, and it's unclear how this deficit can be resolved without significant changes at the state level. Republican leaders at the state level have been slow to act, and without a change to state laws, Milwaukee County is left without options that don't include significant cuts to services. To explore this issue further, Lake Effect's Joy Powers is joined by Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley.
So you just released the financial forecast for Milwaukee County, and as has been predicted before, we are facing a major fiscal cliff. What wasn't previously predicted was really just how large this fiscal cliff is going to be, $109.5 million. How did we get to this point?
Absolutely. Well, I would tell you that, you know, prior to this report, we were predicting just about a year ago that we would see about an $87 million gap over the next 5 years. And to see this new report, it's not necessarily new for us. When we think about the growing gap, we know that it can be contributed to largely driven by our pension costs, which is related to our investment returns. And so that's one of the reasons why that we see the gap growing. But I think that this continuously speaks to the need for a partnership with the state of Wisconsin, something that I have been talking about since I've been county executive, and I think even my predecessors before then. But I think at the end of the day, it shows that particularly local governments in general, we need that partnership with the state to make sure that we can continue to deliver the programs and services that our residents desperately need.
Now, when you say a partnership, I think you mean a couple of the solutions that you're looking at, both possibly a local sales tax option or increasing the shared revenue that Milwaukee County receives from the state. That's how most municipalities are funded in the state, or a large portion of their budgets, I should say. Have we seen progress on either front?
Well, I would say that we have seen progress in the fact that we're all having this discussion, not just local municipalities, throughout the state of Wisconsin, but the state legislature and the governor as well. And while we have not seen exactly what we're going to do to fix the revenues with local governments, I will say that it is hopeful to see all of the folks at the table are having a conversation, trying to figure out how do we make sure that local municipalities statewide have the revenues in order to, again, invest in their local communities. So when it comes down to shared revenue, we know that many communities need that. But when we think about the scale of the problem, particularly for Milwaukee County, the local option sales tax is the best tool available to us through the state legislature that's going to help us really close this gap in the near future.
Now, to clarify for listeners, currently in the state of Wisconsin, there really isn't an option for municipalities to raise their taxes beyond this 0.5 tax that they're allowed on top of the state's tax. Have Republicans in the legislature seemed open to making this change, which would have to be a change made by the legislature?
Yeah, and I appreciate you giving that background, because when you think about counties, I mean, you know, all of us, we have the ability to exercise that 0.5% sales tax. Many of us throughout the entire state have been utilizing that tool, except for a small handful of counties. But I will say that as we continue to have these conversations, people are open to making sure that we can find some type of fix as it relates to the shared revenue pot. I know the governor has thrown out his idea through his budget as it relates to 20% of the total sales tax. And I think that as we continue to talk with both sides of the aisle, many of them are open to making sure that, again, local municipalities have access to additional revenues. If we want to make sure that we are investing in our public safety, if we're investing in our roads, investing in transit, investing in parks, investing in the quality of life issues that so many people depend on, is going to take that partnership with the state. And for Milwaukee County in particular, that includes that 1% sales tax at the very minimum. So we are excited that we're having these conversations. And I would say that people are open. The issue is out there. And now it's about what will happen in the next few months to see what kind of fix that we get to make sure that all local municipalities are successful.
Now, you mentioned a variety of the places where this money really goes. We're talking about parks. We're talking about public safety. We're talking about the very many things that make Milwaukee a city where you want to live, a county where you want to live. Let's say nothing happens with these conversations. Let's say they don't go anywhere. Where are we going to see cuts?
Well, that's a great question. And I think what people need to understand is that, you know, as counties, we are an extension of the state. And so there are programs that the state mandates that we actually provide. And so when you think about the public safety continuum, we have to make sure that we are providing that. But without additional revenues, it's going to be hard for us to fund that public safety continuum. But even when you think about the issues that we have related to our parks, related to our transit, related to our senior services, youth services, disability services, or homelessness services, many of those services that we provide are non-mandated programs. And so in the next couple of years, next four to five years, Milwaukee County will no longer have local dollars to invest in those local priorities. And so we have to understand that the dollars that we invest at the county level all focus on how we can retain our employees, how we can bring in more capital investment and for employee recruitment or for the businesses that we represent. But we are talking about the public safety continuum and the quality of life programs that people rely on and that make people stay here. Those are going to be some of the things that are going to be that are going to see some types of cuts if we don't get the type of partnership that we need with the state of Wisconsin.
Now, you said something interesting there. Non-mandated programs. When we look at mandated programs versus non-mandated programs, what does that mean in the context of the county?
Absolutely. Great question. So, you know, one of our biggest used amenities that we have are like our Milwaukee County Transit System, our Milwaukee County Parks. You know, when you think about our parks, we have the Emerald Necklace of Parks right here in our own backyard. And you can go to any community across this country and you'll never see the type of green space that we have, which makes us an attractive place for people to live, work, and play. And so when you think about those parks and you think about the county transit system, the transit system that allows us to transport people to work, to school, to their healthcare appointments. Those are the things that are non-mandated. Those are things that we decided as a county was extremely important to this community to make sure that we can continue to grow our economy locally here in the county, but also our regional economy at the same time. But those mandated programs are some of the things that all counties across the state of Wisconsin are responsible for. So that's providing the supports for the court systems. That's making sure that we have our sheriff's office out in not just in the courtrooms, but Milwaukee County, we're one of the very few counties that have to patrol our own county highways. And when you think about the fact, the public safety continuum, when an individual is convicted of a misdemeanor where they have to serve a year or less, we as the county are responsible for housing those residents and making sure that we rehabilitate them before they enter back into society. And so, you know, those are some of the mandated programs that we have. And so it's a balancing act because we cannot decide that we're not going to put money or invest in these state mandated programs, because again, that's, we are responsible for carrying out the Wisconsin Constitution and the United States Constitution. And so it really puts us in a bind in making sure that we can fund the county as a whole to make sure that we are, again, a destination that people want to be.
This is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers, and I'm speaking right now with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. As you mentioned, we do have some amount of homelessness in the city of Milwaukee, in Milwaukee County. And like many U.S. cities, Milwaukee has an affordable housing crisis. Milwaukee County also doesn't have enough affordable homes to meet its needs. You've announced a few projects that would increase the number of units available to people here. And a couple of weeks ago, you said there will be yet another housing project soon. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Well, we have a lot of different projects. I don't want to get too ahead of my skis, but, you know, right now we have a housing project happening within South Milwaukee. We've been working with Wauwatosa and Brown Deer as well. And what we've realized, and I think everyone across the country has realized, that we don't have enough housing stock that is available and affordable for many families who live in these communities. So to see the amount of housing that we're bringing on, not just because it's happening countywide, to see this amount of affordable housing happening in suburban areas is a really good thing. And at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we're not pricing people out of being able to continue to live throughout Milwaukee County, no matter what municipality that they live in. And so whether we are talking about individuals who work in public safety, right? We are talking about our police officers, our teachers, our EMS. We're also talking about some of our municipal workers as well, who are doing, for example, sanitation pickup. Many of them work in the communities, but they can't afford to be in those communities. So we want to make sure that we're providing enough housing so those people can stay within their own neighborhoods. And so it's extremely important that we continue to have this conversation as we move forward, because, you know, we're glad to say that we're seeing more housing coming on board and coming online. But we know that this is just a drop in the bucket as it relates to the need. And so, you know, not just with the affordable housing, but what we're doing with the 90 lots that we've purchased within the city of Milwaukee to build single family homes for first time home buyers, particularly who come from communities of color, is going to be extremely powerful in helping us to really build the community right here. And at the end of the day, when we think about housing, it's important to remember that this is just another avenue towards us being the healthiest county in the state. It is difficult for an individual to think about their own health, to think about employment, to think about education when they don't know where they're going to be sleeping later on that night and don't have a roof over their head. And so for us, it's extremely important, particularly as county executives, to continue to talk about the need for housing and continue to partner with developers, with local municipalities, and bring other partners to the table to figure out how we move this forward.
Do you have an idea of how many units we will actually see in maybe the next 5 years, or at least a goal of how many units you want to create within the county?
Well, what I would tell you is that it's very difficult to come up with that number, right? I mean, I think that when we talk about the goal, you know, we need thousands of affordable housing units throughout Milwaukee County, and we probably need, you know, tens of thousands of affordable housing units and even more across the state of Wisconsin. But what I will tell you is that we've been able to make these investments because of the federal dollars that we've received in ARPA funds. And so we are making this investment because we understand what the future holds. But we will say that this is the time where we need partnerships again with the state, with the state legislature and the governor, as well as the federal government, in making sure that we can continue to make these types of investments. Milwaukee County, it will no longer be in a position to make these types of investments because of our fiscal outlook. And we're not the only ones that are in this situation. Every municipality in the state is facing the same thing. And so I think it's important that we continue to keep this conversation alive to make sure that we are planning for the future, bringing as many affordable units online as possible, because it's not getting any better right now. And so we know that rents have went up. Inflation has definitely taken a toll on many different families. So we know that the housing crisis is still ahead of, is still here. And so we need to make sure that we continue to bring this conversation to the forefront. I really appreciate you bringing this up.
Now, finally, with this idea of making sure that Milwaukee County is an equitable space for all people, the director of the Office of Equity, Jeff Roman, recently resigned. Do you have thoughts on what he did in office and really what you hope to see with the next director?
Absolutely. First and foremost, I just have to say congratulations to our former director, Jeff Roman. I think he did an excellent job of being our very first chief equity officer within Milwaukee County in our Office of Equity, and really excited to see what he's going to be doing in his next chapter, because I know he's going to be doing some consulting. But really, you know, it's really continuing to pick up that mantle and make sure, one, we're taking a look internally, looking at Milwaukee County government, making sure that we are fully representative of this community and what we need to do internally to move forward as it relates to equity. Because before we can tell everybody else about what they need to be doing to get in the best place, we have to make sure that when we take a good look in the mirror, we're seeing the best reflection of ourselves. But when it comes down to the Office of Equity, it's about working also not just internally, but working externally with our outside partners, with other municipalities, working with business groups, working with ethnic chambers, and working with nonprofits in the philanthropic community to figure out how we all come together to make sure that we are focusing on equity across the board, which is going to further give us the ability to become the healthiest county in the state of Wisconsin. Equity work is not just owned by Milwaukee County. We need partners in this work, and we can't do it alone unless we can lock arms as we move forward to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to thrive. And so when it comes down to the next director, the goal is to make sure that we don't skip a beat and that we are in the best place possible to make sure that we can continue to bring partners to the table. But also, what new ideas? What new ideas can we bring, and how can we work with other communities across the country to really look at best practices and share those best practices, but also evaluate one another on these best practices. The equity work that we are doing within Milwaukee County, I would say, is fairly new. In 2019, we were the first municipality in the country to declare racism as a public health crisis. And we're going to continue to build this plane as we fly it. But we know that we don't have to do it alone. So it is my hope that the next director continues the legacy that the director Roman is leaving, and making sure that we're bringing more people into the fold.
All right. Well, County Executive, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Well, always a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
David Crowley is the Milwaukee County Executive, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. At WUWM.com, you can find our previous conversation with the Wisconsin Policy Forum about this looming fiscal crisis and how it could impact city and county services. Did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Just search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen to us on demand. You can also follow WUWM on Instagram, where you'll find videos and pictures from news stories and Lake Effect interviews. In about 25 minutes, we'll look at what live albums have been recorded here in Milwaukee. But first, we're joined by a group of working parents to talk about the challenges they face daily and how the pandemic has impacted their outlook both at work and at home. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. This week, we examined some research that revealed half of working women in Wisconsin were considering leaving their jobs since the pandemic began.
Working moms especially just became burnt out. And as a result, when those employers didn't demonstrate empathy, when those employers didn't demonstrate a sense of understanding, so many women said, I just can't go back into that work environment. I don't want to go back to 2018, 2019, where I am juggling it all. I need to have a little bit more flexibility and balance in my life.
Today, to get a more personal perspective on this research, I'm joined by a group of working parents to talk about their experiences trying to balance work and parenting, as well as how the pandemic has impacted them.
So thank you all for being here. We're going to kind of dive in to all of your different experiences. And to start, I would like to know, and you all have a big range of kids and how long you've been working parents, but what has your experience with family leave been like? And we can, we'll start off with the mothers. Amelia or Valeria, do either of you want to start out?
So I think with the companies that I've been a part of, they definitely have supported the family medical leave. Being on the go once you're in leave, I did take actually, I think, 10 to 12 weeks. So I'm not sure if that is a bit of the norm or not. With the companies that I was a part of, it definitely was supported. So I wish it could have been longer, definitely, because I feel like once you come back to work, for my scenario, your kid is about 3 months old and they're just starting to get a personality, that you're just getting into the routine. So it was a little hard for myself to get back into the work routine of seeing like, whoever's watching our kid, it was my parents for our first two kids and then daycare for my third youngest. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a struggle of just that adjustment, but always knowing that your kids are in good hands, that was making the day better. But I do think some of the days I couldn't wait to get home fast enough just to see them and just kind of be back in home life. But as far as the actual leave at the companies, I do feel very valued that I was able to take as much as I was able to. Yeah.
Were you worried about it? Did you know how much to expect? At least with your first child, when the first time you had to take leave from a company?
I did. It was very well communicated with our HR professionals. So I think that was a little bit of a lesser stress to have to worry about. I think the only weird instance was, 6 weeks is what you generally get for FMLA, but you're only really paid for the five. So with the company that I was at previously, we had to take a week of PTO if you wanted to really get to that 6 full weeks of paid. And then it was, I don't remember specifically, but maybe up to like 75% of your pay for the remainder, up to that full 12. And then if you wanted to go beyond that, it was just unpaid. So I think it worked well. My husband's company was able to kind of supplement. He also had a paternity leave, so we were able to get a few additional weeks with him covering just kind of the childcare. So it worked out. I think it was nice, but I think overall story, I wish it was longer.
Yeah, yeah. How about for you, Valeria?
I have the same situation. I had just onboarded about 6 months before I had to leave to have Liam. And so I didn't qualify for FMLA and I had to take a leave of absence, which then I could use my vacation time and my sick time. So I was gone for 3 months, but half of it was unpaid and the other one was using up all my all the other hours. So then when I came back, I had nothing to use for when Liam was sick, if I got sick, any emergencies. Granted, I have a very supportive team and we've worked around my schedule to accommodate those hours that I've missed because it does happen. The babies do get sick. So I do wish things were set up a little different. Maybe I had started sooner, but, you know, life happens. And I wasn't planning on the timelines aligning the way they did. But I also agree. I wish it was longer than 3 months. I had a C-section, so I was just starting to feel myself again, like recovering as my body was getting more strength. And then I had to, you know, kind of give up that time with Liam. In the first 3 months, I didn't really have that much time to spend with him. I couldn't carry him. He was a big baby. And I was told you can't carry more than 5 pounds. And he was a 9-pound baby at birth. Mm-hmm. And so it was constantly like waiting on others to help me, you know, carry him. And by the time I was able to, I had to go back to work.
So. Yeah, kind of ripped back and forth between the two.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Dante and Darren, you both work for Safe and Sound. So what have your experiences been like?
With me, there was no paternity leave or anything like that. My wife was able to go. She had 9 weeks of maternity leave, which was great. So I took a PTO time, and Safe and Sound's been great at accommodating just when I need to take off for sick days and things like that. But yeah.
How much time were you able to take right after the birth?
I had actually, she was due to be born on the 22nd of December. So I had originally taken off that time before because we expected her to maybe come early because my wife just looked like she was going to pop. And she ended up waiting all the way until January 1st. So then I took an additional week off. So afterwards.
Yeah, okay. Just the week. Yeah. How about for you?
Well, let's see. I became a parent in the 90s. So I was a college student, so there was no leave time. There was work, school, child, work, school, child. So there was really no leave time. My wife, she was able to take some time, obviously, but she was also a student. So her time was in bed reading and doing papers. So there was really no leave at that point.
Yeah, and, you know, we always think about maternity leave. That's what automatically comes up. But there is no standard for paternity leaves yet. So how much stress did you guys go through, or how much mental space did that take up in your brain, especially, like, for you as a first-time parent?
Yeah, I definitely just felt bad leaving in the morning for work, especially after we'd have a night where, like, the baby wasn't sleeping through the night, or just my wife was really tired, or breastfeeding wasn't working. Just kind of being torn away to go to work was a harder thing, for sure. Not being able to be there for that support, man.
I think that it's a normal experience, waking up at night, making sure bottles are made, the breastfeeding part. You know, children is unpredictable, so you never know what one day is going to look like from the next. So just being prepared for just about anything, you know. And like you were saying, just never knowing when they're going to get sick or have to go to doctors, especially when the immunization and shot time comes up and they're irritated and just don't want to cooperate. So just being able to, I guess, roll with the punches, or just being able to adapt to what they're going through. So,
well, it sounds like being able to adapt and be prepared for anything really takes a lot of good teamwork and communication. So I'm curious about what your conversations were like with your partners, your spouses, about how juggling kids and work would be like, you know, outside of dealing, there's logistics of day-to-day life, of keeping a child alive, but also yourself, you know, you got to take care of yourself and get sleep. You know, what about any miscommunications or cultural expectations in parenthood that you had to navigate?
I think it's always a struggle for us. We live by schedule. I think it's like we have our work schedule, you have a feeding schedule, you have a sleeping schedule, you have a transportation schedule. So for my husband and I, we're always who's picking up today, who's dropping off today, in constant communication. I'm running late for a meeting. I can't leave at the time that I need to make sure that we pick up our kids. There are instances of I have 5 minutes to get there before they're going to yell at me at school that I'm late for daycare pickup. So I think from the stressor of that, it is always like for a mom specifically, I think we're always just in the back of our head, got to do 10, 12 different things before I leave for the day to make sure that I'm queued up for the next day so that my schedule is a little easier. But then when you get home, it's always the schedule too, the back thinking of, all right, what's for dinner? Where's homework? What are we accomplishing in home life? So definitely there are a lot of stressors that it is hard to navigate. But I think once you are into the routine and working with your partner's significant other, it does help to know that there's a teamwork scenario and that we're there to help and support each other. And keeping the tiny humans alive is the number one priority.
How about for you, Valeria?
I think I'm set up in a little different because of my cultural expectations. I come from a Mexican, very traditional family. And although we're kind of deviating away from those, like the woman does everything, there is sometimes those like signaling that I should be doing everything. So there's sometimes comments from like my dad, well, you work from home. You should be able to cook, take care of your child, do your work, have the house clean by the time your partner comes home. And he doesn't understand the concept of working from home. The concept of the baby alone is a full-time job. And so I'm not able to do both and cook and clean. So those comments, even though I'm not doing them, are, you know, signaling that I'm expected to be doing everything, do the drop-off, do the pickup, do the cleaning, do everything. And my partner's not saying those, but, you know, there's constant comments from our parents of the way we are raising our kid. And because of our schedules, how they're aligned right now, it does feel that I'm doing the most at the present moment. I'm doing the pickup and the drop off because of he leaves before I do and then comes home after I do. So sometimes it does feel a little unbalanced, especially as a breastfeeding parent. And so technically, automatically, the baby was with me at all times, and there was no way around it. And so it did feel very unbalanced.
Well, and pumping in itself for breastfeeding, yes. That's its own schedule demands.
Oh, yeah, every 3 hours, yeah. No matter what I was doing.
That was going to be my comment, is that I don't think people outside of, if you're living and breathing in the parent life, that when you're a mom, specifically if you're on the breastfeeding journey or pumping journey or even just regular feeding, you live in 3 hour increments. So
yes.
Even though you feel like you need to do the cooking, the cleaning and all of that, time stops when you're feeding the baby. And that, it, you know, depending on how long or how successful it is, you're feeding the baby for 20, 30 minutes or more. So even though you have this expectation of yourself when you are a working parent at home or in the office, the experience that I had of also being a breastfeeding mom, that when you're at work, you still have to make that time and you still have to segment your day of still staying on that schedule every 3 hours. And so, you know, whether you're blocking off your time or whatnot, it is a little bit of a hindrance into the normalcy of going back to work from once you're a parent, because you still do have that other aspect of carrying family life into the work life.
If you're just joining us on Lake Effect, I'm Audrey Nowakowski, and this is a special Working Parents Roundtable. I'm joined by Amelia Flatley, Dante Holmes, Darian Pruitt, and Valeria Navarro-Viegas. We're talking about their experiences as working mothers and fathers and how things may have changed for them since the pandemic, both in work and personal expectations as parents. So Dante and Darian, as fathers, I'm really interested to hear your perspectives. What kind of conversations did you have, you know, with your partners about labor? Because it's automatically assumed. I mean, and we've heard from mothers, like, they feel like it's all on them.
Yeah.
What kind of expectations did you have going into it? Or what did you want to change? Or what did you want to do personally as a parent? What did you want to experience?
Sure. So for me and my wife, first, I want to say moms are just amazing. Absolutely. And that, especially in the main early time, they do have all the work, especially if you're breastfeeding and things like that. My wife came from a pretty big family. She's one of 11. And every one of her sisters is, anyone who is a parent is also a stay-at-home parent. That's different with just how our life works. So we wanted to be really intentional and have those conversations in the beginning about cooking and cleaning. You know, as soon as I like to cook, so I tried anything that I could take off of her shoulders. As soon as she became pregnant, we just started those practices and those conversations on how the dynamic was just going to be a little different, because, like you said, just we have to keep this little human alive, and every 3 hours she's got to be fed. So, we're still learning. Obviously, this roundtable is great for me because I feel like I'm taking notes on how I can do better. And yeah.
How about for you, Dante? You've had a lot of experience. Things changed over the years?
It has. It varies. Because as children get older, they can take some responsibility. But we've always been blessed for the fact that I call him my Manny, but my wife's father was retired. So he kind of helped throughout the process for just about all of our children. Where we rarely had to use daycare. We rarely had to worry about who was going to pick up after school and things like that, because we were blessed enough that he was able to assist. So my daughter's is like, that's their dad too, or you know, whatever, because he was always there. But there's responsibilities that we have to look at. Like I said, it varies from children to child to child. I think early on when we were younger, our parents just wanted to make sure that we finished our education and, you know, landed on a solid ground so that we could have the total responsibility of raising our children as we seen fit. Culturally, you know, we always say it takes a village. So honestly, we had a really strong village that helped from sisters, aunties and uncles and, you know, and then, like I said, as the child gets older, our oldest children would kind of take on some of those responsibilities. So we were able to work, have some us time. And we were very involved. My sons were very athletic. So I was at every sports thing, football, basketball, whatever it was, traveling around the country doing basketball and things like that. So I was lucky enough to have a significant other who was able to stay home with my daughters or whatever the case may be. So it's a team approach. It sounds easy speaking about it now as I'm ending my term as a in-home parent, almost an empty nester. But I can relate to everyone's struggle. You know, there's definitely times where you just go in the room, shut the door, and be like, what did I get myself into? Like, what is this? Is this life really? But, you know, once they become adults and they become successful and you start seeing the little habits that you had that they now have, they're many yous. You know, like, it's just amazing now to sit back and just laugh as they become parents and just like, yeah, I'm into that. So,
yeah.
So it's interesting listening to everyone's comments.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I know we can't get into the full spectrum that is all of your experiences, but as you say, like, there's the kids' schedule, there's your schedules, there's your work schedules. And often your kids' schedule does not align, especially school hours, right? Hmm. Like, the workday encompasses before and after that. So I know this is a very general point, but are there certain things that come to your mind about the biggest challenges or frustrations you have as working parents right now?
Just for me, newly, I think just the time spent, you know, she's a new baby, so I want to spend as much time as possible. And when we get home in the night, by the time we do dinner and get her all ready, I mean, it's like 5:30 and we're tired. So we're trying to get to bed by 8:30 or 9, you know. So just the lack of time, I think. Yeah, biggest frustration.
I was at a previous firm where I had a struggle of the medical appointments, the, you know, scheduling of this, that, what other. And especially in the world of COVID, I had, I think she was 8 months old in COVID. So it was, feels like a decade ago, but there wasn't the flexibility as far as you need to come and go. We trust you. You're an adult. You can do your job. You can do your work. There wasn't that comfort level with the previous place that I was at. So I was only, if there was something coming up, it was more you had a forced level of taking PTO then to cover that time. So that was a struggle where you're always up against the wire of, okay, well, I know that my kids have X amount of things that are going to happen. You never know of unexpected of being sick. And then you're dwindling down your PTO. So that leads into kind of your more happy time of when you can take time off or plan different vacations of being paid on that aspect. So I would say there is a definite culture shift of the company that I'm at now, where it's definitely embracing the hybrid work schedule. If you have to go to events, the trust factor is definitely there. And I think embraced and acknowledged that we're humans, we have kids, we want to be a part of things. And that I think it's lessened my stress and more appreciation of being a part of a company that's more progressive in that mindset.
I think the work-life balance is very important. And as we see agencies and companies kind of recognizing that. I think early on in my professional career, it was all work, work, work. You got children, so you got to work. You know, now it's more so as we get closer, especially post-COVID, that work-life balance is so important. And I think employers are seeing that. Like, look, we got to make sure that you're able to just release from here and, you know, take care of yourself, take care of your family and things of that sort. So I think you know, that work-life balance is really important. I think also, too, COVID taught us a lot.
Well, and Valeria, I want to circle back to you because you were hired during COVID and then, as you said, became a parent as well. So How has working during the pandemic and, quote, coming back to work, and we're hybrid here yet, so how has that helped change expectations or help you manage being a working parent or, you know, communicate the expectations you have?
I think I wouldn't have been able to be a working mom had I not been working at the station all this time, because my son did not like formula. So first we struggled with latching. It didn't work out. And the healthcare system made us think that we couldn't feed him formula for the longest. You know, it's just the pressure and the kind of insinuating that breastfeeding is the only way. And that was my personal experience with the care team that I had. Until we said, you know what, we need to try it. So we did try the formula for a while. And after a couple months, he rejected about 6, 7. We were going through many different formulas. So it ended up being that I was in a situation where I had to exclusively pump. And so what that meant, I wasn't producing for 2, 3 days out. And so I couldn't be away from him. Even though he was not latching onto me, I had to be near him. And working from home allowed me to find an in-home daycare, too. One is my mom, and the other is a very close family friend, where they took care of him throughout the day, and I was working from their home. So they offered an office to me. Had COVID not created this work environment that we're in, I would have had to stay home so that I could feed him. So, you know, COVID brought on a lot of negative aspects to our lives, but it also brought a very, very good way for us to function as working moms. So that's why I say I'm very blessed in the way that I've been supported at work.
So knowing that the United States overall, we don't have universal family leave, it's kind of company to company. Yeah. Most workplaces, for example, don't have daycares or even pumping areas designated. What, in your opinions, are some of the top needs you'd like to see more support for?
I love the aspect of just one scenario, going to the zoo where they actually have little pumping booths for moms and or dads or whatever that you need. It's a privacy aspect, but it's also normalizing so that you don't feel so much pressure, as like Valeria was saying, that the world just tells you sometimes that you can only breastfeed babies, that formula is not good. I think that we're making progress to see and adhere to all of the needs of working parents. So I think that that's one positive aspect of it. I do think from the time management and all of that, moving from the COVID world of having the hybrid flexibility now, that's been a huge indicator of where we're going as a society for, again, normalizing flexibility. And I think overall, just obviously, like Valeria and I have said, more time off is what would be best, because I think then it takes off the parent guilt factor of somebody else is helping raise my kid when it does take a village. The time you get with your kids when they're this young, you don't get back. It's going to change, and we need to change, and we need to have people advocating for the change.
I am a huge advocate for some resource signaling where there's like pumping area around the city. I would love to see a map where can I go? That aspect of being included in within like the society they would live in, which is like very fast paced of like friends hanging out all the time, and you're feeling a little isolated because you're attached to the wall technically, or to like a pump, that accessibility to be at more places.
Mm-hmm. How about for you both as fathers, what kind of support or resources would you guys like to see?
I mean, you mentioned paternity leave, and I think like, or maybe just a family leave, I think would be nice. You know, like I said earlier, I feel guilty or bad leaving the house sometimes when I've got to go to a meeting or I've got to go to work or there's an extra thing on the weekend or things like that, especially in the beginning, you know. So possibly that.
Yeah. I think I agree with what everyone was saying. I think there should be additional time for parents outside of PTO, sick time. I think that there should be some benefit for parents to be able to allocate time to their family and children. I think that would be definitely helpful.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for taking time out of your very busy schedules to come here today and talk about this important issue. I really appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Amelia Flatley, marketing manager for the Bolt Company and mother of four. Dante Holmes is a senior program director for Safe and Sound and a father of 12 between him and his wife. Darian Pruitt also works for Safe and Sound as the community organizer, and he became a new father in January. Valeria Navarro-Viegas is WUWM's digital editor and a mother of one. We want to hear your story ideas for Lake Effect. If you have an idea for an interview or conversation you'd like to hear on Lake Effect, give our community connection line a call. The number is 414-251-8970. You can also submit your ideas at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Albums from Nat King Cole to Rufus Wainwright were recorded right here in Milwaukee. We'll learn what live albums were born here in the Brew City next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Finally today, we're going to hear an encore bubbler talk from WUWM's Mayon Silver, where she explores what live albums have been recorded in Milwaukee venues over the years.
Bubbler Talk, quenching Milwaukee's thirst for knowledge.
I'm WUWM's Mayon Silver. And Bubbler Talk question asker Zach Biernot reached out to us.
I'm a big fan of live albums, and I'm curious if there's any albums that have been recorded in Milwaukee from big name acts that I haven't heard.
So we figured it'd be a good idea to call up some local record shops. We got a lot of initial reactions like this one from Terry Hackbarth of Bullseye Records.
Bullseye, how can I help you?
So my question for you is, do you know of any live records recorded in Milwaukee venues?
That's a good one.
So the answer may not be big name acts, but Terry eventually came up with an answer.
Magic Sam live at the Avant Garde. That was a old coffee shop and blues club from the 60s and early 70s. And that whole concert is from Milwaukee.
The venue actually shut down later that year. And as for Magic Sam, he died young, though some still call him the King of West Side Blues, a subgenre of Chicago blues. And our listener Zach's reaction?
I'm liking Magic Sam. That sounds like a coffee shop or something for sure, like, you know, a small venue.
I poked around into who else recorded live albums in Milwaukee, and multiple people mentioned the Marshall Tucker Band.
The Marshall Tucker Band.
With one of the last rock shows at Milwaukee's Downtown Performing Arts Center, recorded live in 1974, for the record, Where We All Belong, a two-disc set. Dewey Gill, DJ for WMSE 91.7 FM, was there.
It's Southern rock, but its roots are country and blues, really. We put on a somewhat short, but energy-packed show.
Listener Zach really dug the song Ramblin'.
Yeah, what's your take on those guys?
Shredding, I like that. It's busy as live.
Hopping into a time machine, we travel back to a much different Milwaukee venue in 1946 to hear Nat King Cole.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Circle Room of Hotel LaSalle. Music coming to you from the beautiful Hotel LaSalle on Campus Hill overlooking downtown Milwaukee. Presenting now the distinctive rhythms of the King Cole Trio.
The trio, piano, bass, and guitar, no drums, opened with Oh But I Do.
Do I love you, gal? Oh, but I do. Oh, but I do. Do you know why? Oh, but you do. Oh, but you do.
Now let's fast forward to the Pabst Theater in 2007. Singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright performed there for what became the live album Milwaukee at Last with 3 exclamation marks. Here's the opening song called Release the Stars. Wainwright greets the crowd.
Hello, Milwaukee.
And at the end of the song, as the audience cheers uproariously, Wainwright says,
wow, I was not expecting that. Thank you. Thank you so much. My God.
A warm reception indeed. And as we close with a cut from a live album by The Replacements, recorded at UWM in 1989, listener Zach Biernot has his own pitch.
We got so many cool venues here, like Cactus Club and Schenck Hall and Turner Hall have great sound. It's a phenomenal live experience. So, hey, come and take your band and record an album there, whoever's listening.
Support for this season of Bubbler Talk comes from UW Credit Union. What do you want to know about the Milwaukee area? Submit your question at wuwm.com/bubblertalk.
You can hear Bubbler Talk every Thursday on Lake Effect. And you can find past Bubbler Talks like last week's, which explored the sundial at the Mitchell Park Domes at wuwm.com. That's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Joy Powers and Mallory Chang join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Kate Flynn, Robert Larry, and Chase Browning. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. We also heard from Mayan Silver and Rafa Munoz from the WUWM news team this week. Jason Reavy is our studio engineer. Michelle Maternowski is our digital manager. Valera Navarro-Viegas is our digital editor. Trapper Chef wrote our theme music. Join us again on Monday at noon to learn about the Hmong American Friendship Association and how their mission to serve Hmong people in Milwaukee has changed over time. Plus, we'll look at some new and interesting plants to grow in your garden in this month's Dig In. If you've missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.